Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Katie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Don't forget, you have until tomorrow at 5 p.m. to get your picks in for our weekly Pick'em contest, which continues all football season long. Make your picks by 5 p.m. tomorrow and have a chance to win a Fan Zone gift card each and every week. Just head over to charlestonsportsradio.com, and you'll see it right on the homepage. Get your picks in by tomorrow at 5 p.m. and see how you do this weekend. Lee Sterling will join us an hour from now for his football picks of the weekend. But in the meantime, we get ready for the Braves and Brewers starting their NLDS tomorrow. Game one tomorrow, 4:37, first pitch in Milwaukee. And joining us now to help preview it is Corey McCartney, who we have on throughout this baseball season to talk Braves. He's with us now. Corey, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, great, Luke. How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. Before we get to the Braves and what to expect here tomorrow moving forward, let's go back to last night with the Dodgers. I've been complaining about this not only this week, but really since they implemented these rules about the one-game wild card. I'm curious of your thoughts. Do you like the baseball playoff setup right now with the one-game wild card?
I would like it if we had the ability to give teams a first-round bye. I don't like it for a 100-win team like the Dodgers having to put everything on the line for one game. And just, you know, whether we want to reseed going into the playoffs, the postseason, or something along those lines, I think there needs to be some alteration so a team in their position isn't playing in that situation. But, you know, I think it certainly has its merits and provides a lot of drama, as we obviously saw last night.
Yeah, the two good games the last 2 days. Now the Dodgers take on the Giants before we move to the Braves. Dodgers-Giants, two best records in baseball squaring off here in the other NLDS. Are the Dodgers your favorite in the NL, the Giants, somebody else? Who do you like most right now in the NL?
I like the Dodgers. I mean, you know, obviously the Giants were the best team in the league the entire year. Certainly they, you know, ended up edging out the Dodgers to get that National League West crown, but they may not have Brandon Belt until the NLCS if they make it that far. So, you know, that's obviously a big loss for them. We know this Dodgers team, what they're capable of and just how deep they are. I mean, it's just an embarrassment of riches at so many different spots for them. So, I ultimately think, you know, in the postseason, you want to really narrow it down to elite starting pitching and guys that can own moments. And the Dodgers have that in the National League more than anybody.
Now, when it comes to the Braves-Brewers, this series is interesting to me because, you know, the Braves have a couple of good starting pitchers here the second half of the season that maybe can match up with the Brewers, but the Brewers have a really strong starting rotation. The Braves have a better lineup than the Brewers have, so it's kind of opposite here, strength versus weakness on each side to a certain degree. My question being, when you look at Braves-Brewers, what do you see as the most important part of this series and how these two match up?
Well, I mean, certainly you kind of hit it on the head there. I mean, you know, Max Fried in the second half is the best ERA in baseball. I mean, Charlie Morton has the best postseason resume of anybody in this series. Jock Peterson not included, obviously, he's got a ring. But, I mean, certainly, you know, it's going to come down to what the Braves bats can do against those vaunted Brewers starters of Corbin Burnes, Brandon Woodruff, and Freddie Peralta. I mean, Burnes is likely going to win the NL Cy Young. I mean, Woodruff, you know, fanning 10.5 per nine. I mean, you know, Peralta has got 12.16 Ks per nine. We know what this Braves offense is capable of. So I think a lot of it is going to come down to that. But there is some kind of scary elements of this from the Brewers. Christian Yelich has had the worst full season of his career, a 1.9 Fangraph WAR player. Jackie Bradley Jr., who they signed to a two-year, $24 million contract, has been a negative WAR player this year. So while the Brewers' offense hasn't been that fantastic, to have two major stars like that that you know what they're ultimately capable of and having not done it to this point, I think that's kind of a little bit of a scary subplot there for the Braves.
A couple of follow-ups to that. As you mentioned with the starting pitchers and how Max Fried has pitched, the Brewers' best starting rotation this year. They have a great 1-2-3 punch, and in a short series like this, that's dangerous. But as you touched on, Freed's been pitching well. Charlie Morton's been pitching well. Even Ian Anderson, you know, I would trust in a playoff game. So how do you think, as we sit here today heading into this series, you know, can this Braves rotation match up in a short series to what we've seen from the Brewers this year?
That's certainly the biggest, the biggest question. You know, Charlie Morton's been great of late. I mean, I mentioned what Freed's been doing, but, you know, you look at Morton, he's got a 2.60 ERA and 34 and two-thirds innings in September and October, a 2.11 batting average against. So, I mean, the Brewers obviously have, you know, the guy really out there to set the tone in game one in Burns, but this was why Charlie Morton was brought to Atlanta ultimately, you know, and ended up being a bigger element with Mike Soroka being lost for the year again with this ruptured Achilles. But certainly, you know, Morton is capable of performing in this level. Corbin Burns hasn't pitched in the postseason in 2 years. I mean, so there's he's not performed it this well, and when he's done it, he's not been a starter. So this is a completely new experience for him, and you've got a guy in Morton who this is old hat for. So, you know, I think a lot riding on Morton and his ability to, you know, overcome a guy that could be a major obstacle for the Braves in game one.
And then going back to the Braves lineup, you know, because the focus in this series, I do think, will be on that starting rotation for Milwaukee. Braves have the better lineup than Milwaukee, but we've been talking here in the show this week, teams that rely on home runs, I don't think fare as well in the postseason. For the Braves, 48% of their runs this year came on homers. For this time of year, against this pitching staff, you know, is that a concern for you? How do you look at this Braves lineup and what they may be able to do in the playoffs here against this pitching staff?
I mean, certainly you can say that's problematic. I mean, you know, since the trade deadline when they brought in Jorge Soler, Adam Duvall, Eddie Rosario, and Jock Peterson, the Braves have hit more outfield home runs than anybody. You know, certainly from that end, they've relied on the home run a lot. You know, we know Adam Duvall is a real three true outcomes guy in this era of it. But I look at Austin Riley and Freddie Freeman as the real factors here for the Braves. I mean, they both performed really well in the two series against Milwaukee this season. Austin Riley led the team with going over 1,000 OPS against the Brewers. Freddie Freeman was at 974 in those matchups. So, and Ozzie Albies did well as well. So, while obviously we put a ton of focus on the home runs and on the team who, you know, had all four guys in the infield hit over 25 home runs, this team can manufacture runs as well. And I think those two performing so well against the Brewers in these earlier games this year, I think, is a big talking point for the Braves going into this.
Previewing Braves Brewers with Corey McCartney. He's on Twitter at Corey J. McCartney. When it comes to the Braves bullpen in the playoff series, how much faith or trust do you have in that bullpen, or maybe more specifically, Will Smith, if the game is on the line in the ninth inning?
I mean, when you stack them up against each other, I mean, obviously the Braves have, you know, the best bullpen. The Brewers have the best bullpen arm in this series in Josh Hader. I mean, the guy's numbers are just absolutely ridiculous. But when you stack them up against each other, the Braves have actually been a more valuable overall bullpen. And then you take the fact that Devin Williams, who broke his hand, will not be in this series for the Brewers. I mean, Tyler Matzek has been fantastic since mid-July. I mean, he's, you know, got a 154 batting average against, A.J. Minter's at 186. Will Smith, meanwhile, has been at 180, and he's led the league in second-half saves. I know it's been cardiac at times, and you know, he's only had 10 of his last 29 appearances in which he's faced the minimum, which could be big trouble in this postseason. But outside of Josh Hader, this is not a daunting Brewers bullpen. I mean, they're going to be moving some guys from that were in their rotation down there that is valuable pieces. But you're looking at Brent Suter, Brad Boxberger as a setup guys. That's not Devin Williams. A guy who that airbender pitch is absolutely elite. So I think the Braves have an ability to get through, but you've got to do damage to get those starters even out of the game before you start wondering what you're going to do in that bullpen against anybody not named Josh Hader.
Now, I'm a self-proclaimed nerd. I love roster construction when it comes to these playoff series and how different managers handle these series and who they want to take on their roster. This may be getting in the weeds a little bit. The Braves will have to announce their roster tomorrow morning. For you, do you see any sort of roster dilemmas or decisions here that need to be made by Snitker and the organization for this series in particular?
Well, you look at the first couple times in this run of four division titles in which, you know, they carried three catchers, and they, you know, they did that, you know, because we didn't have the secondary catcher wasn't a big offensive threat. I mean, certainly, you know, when you think about Chris, about William Contreras and how he's not fared all that well at the plate since, you know, really early in the stint that he got with Travis d'Arnaud out, Shea Langeliers is an elite catching prospect in every facet of the game. You know, he's been traveling with the team to Milwaukee. So I think, do they carry another catcher? And does Rich Rodriguez, who, you know, they went out and got at the trade deadline, who's really struggled with that fastball and reliance that he has, does he make this roster? I think those, to me, are two big, big question marks because, you know, this team has so few questions, I think, than the one the previous 3 years because they're so deep. But I think catching and in the bullpen are a couple questions.
Couple last things for you. You know, I am a Red Sox fan. I make no bones about it here on the air. But going into this postseason, for me, for the Red Sox just to get here was enough. Then to end the Yankees season, that was the icing on the cake. I'll be rooting for the Red Sox to beat the Rays. But if they lose, you know, I'll understand, hey, this was still a successful season. I bring that up because for the Braves, I know they always have aspirations to win a World Series, fourth straight division title. But, you know, at the trade deadline, they were still trying to get over 500 for the first time. Now they're in the playoffs. My point being, as a Braves fan, when you look at this team in this playoff field with the Giants, the Dodgers, has this been enough just to turn this thing around, win the division again, and get to the playoffs? Or should Braves fans feel disappointed if they're unable to get past, say, the Brewers this series?
I mean, honestly, I think you can look at it from both ways. I mean, remember, it took this team 109 games to get above 500. No Braves team has ever made the postseason needing that long to get over 500. The 1914 Boston Braves took 92 games. 92 games, they ended up winning the World Series that year, by the way. But, you know, the fact that I think getting in was obviously the mission. But once you get in, I think then everyone kind of starts to have this, okay, well, anything can happen now, right? I mean, I think that's the problem with that kind of, you know, that we have this approach and we have so many teams in the postseason that you're ultimately going to think, well, we're in, we got a chance. But, I mean, certainly, you know, you get through the Brewers and all that starting pitching that they have, the next matchup could be even more daunting. No Ronald Acuna, no Mike Soroka, and no one wants to talk about it, but no Marcelo Zuna. You had Travis d'Arnaud missing for 50-some games. To me, just getting in and defending that division title when we thought this was going to be the deepest in division in baseball is a feat upon itself. So I think the Braves getting in is enough, but I'm sure, you know, should they fall flat, you're going to have a lot of people that are going to be pretty upset about it.
Absolutely. And well, part of that, too, I guess the other side would be, you know, four straight division titles, maybe some feel like you have to take advantage. So even though they're getting ready for this series against the Brewers, I don't want to look ahead prematurely, but the other question for me would be, from the other side, for the Braves, you know, how long do you think this window stays open? If they don't accomplish anything this year, Braves fans, should you feel like, oh, that's okay, we'll be right back here next year? You know, how what are we looking at for the future of this team right now?
Well, you know, obviously you've got, you know, a contract for Ronald Acuna Jr. that was an 8-year deal that's going to keep him, you know, in Atlanta for, you know, for the foreseeable future, maybe even beyond that, the 2029 season. Ozzie Albies is under contract for, you know, almost equally as long. When you have those guys under those club-friendly deals and you have all the young pitching that they have, the window's not going anywhere. It's just simply a matter of what do they do around them? What's the deal for Freddie Freeman? Does he come back to Atlanta? You know, all those little factors are at play, but this team is differently built than the ones from the 90s where, you know, they had the Chipper Jones and the Maddoxes and Smoltz and Glavin. But they were constantly having to revolve doors to kind of supplement and have those major pieces. They have guys who aren't going anywhere for a long time. So to me, this window is completely open.
Last thing, we'll let you get out of here on this. Corey McCartney on Twitter, Corey J. McCartney. A prediction. Do you think the Braves get past the Brewers? How many games do you think this series goes?
I think it goes five games. Over at Talking Chop, I picked the Braves in five. But I think if you're going to end up seeing Corbin Burns multiple times, and the Braves got five runs on him earlier this year, I think that's to the Braves' detriment. So I think the Brewers are ultimately going to take this thing, but I do think it's going to go the distance.
He's Corey McCartney on Twitter at Corey J. McCartney. You can read his breakdown of this series over at Talking Chop. Corey, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the playoff baseball.
All right, thank you so much.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Corey McCartney, our go-to Braves guy, breaking things down for this NLDS, Braves-Brewers. Yeah, for the Braves, I think it's that perspective that, hey, just be happy. I mean, they have the 12th most wins in the league, only 10 playoff teams. There are teams left out of the playoffs that had a better season than the Braves. Just be happy you're here. Be happy you got invited to the dance, especially when you couldn't get over 500 till August. You win the division again. You know, you root for them to beat the Brewers, but if they lose, have the perspective like, hey, you know what? At least we got to this point. Because 2 months ago, it looked like, you know, we were going to be a third-place team, have a losing season. And with those pieces, they could come back next year, and they'll be the favorite in the division again next year, depending on what the Mets do this offseason. I still don't like the Phillies. Nationals and Marlins are still a ways away. It's going to be the Braves-Mets here, I believe, for the next few years, depending on how aggressive Steve Cohen and the Mets want to get. So for the Braves, it's kind of like, this is the, hey, we got here. If we go beat the Brewers, that's nice. But then you got to go up against either the Dodgers or the Giants, so it's a tough path. Best rotation, then one of the best teams in baseball, then the World Series. Of course, you root for your team, but you understand, like, yeah, you know what? This is kind of good just getting to this point already. When we come back, though, we'll further break down that series. I'll give you the keys to the Braves-Brewers. We'll also catch up with Paul Ciarci in just over 10 minutes from now to get ready for Week 5 of the NFL season. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today?
It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, the keys to this Braves-Brewers series. Appreciate Corey McCartney joining us last segment to help break it down. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. We'll talk fantasy football coming up in just a little bit with Paul Charchian and get you ready for Week 5 of the NFL season, which begins with a great game tonight. We got two playoff games in baseball today and a great Thursday night football game. It's a good Thursday in the sports world. Braves Brewers begin tomorrow. They get the earlier slot, the 4 o'clock slot, 4:37 first pitch, game one tomorrow. For the Brewers, the focus, and we've been focusing on it this week, is just that they have the best rotation. They got a good bullpen too, but the rotation is the best. Best 1-2-3 punch in baseball. They have the Cy Young and their other two, their number two and number three starters will get Cy Young votes, I imagine, as well. All three guys average more than 10 strikeouts per nine innings. It's a strong 1-2-3 punch, and in a short series, that's all you need. Three pitchers, they will pitch all five games. That's all you need, if it even goes five games. That's the biggest concern for the Braves, of course. That's the biggest strength for the Brewers. Just led by the pitching. This time of year, I think pitching is still very important. The weakness for the Brewers, well, that's the lineup. Now, Corey mentioned about two guys that have not had good years. You fear them playing to the back of their baseball cards. I don't think they'll just wake up this series. Like Jackie Bradley Jr., this really is just who he is. Now, he's been really bad this year offensively. But he was never a great hitter. He's had a couple of decent seasons. He's usually a streaky hitter, hits a lot of home runs, incredible defensive center fielder, one of the best in the league, maybe the best defensive center fielder. Nobody tracks a fly ball better than JBJ. But at the plate, he's a frequent strikeout victim that doesn't hit for average and has some pop in the bat. So would I be that concerned about him coming alive? He had some big hits in 2018 in the playoffs. He could hit a couple of homers, but he had such a down year. You know, going into this series, I don't know if that's public enemy number one for me in that lineup. And Christian Yelich, of course, we know his potential, his ability, what he's capable of. Maybe he does wake up in the big moment. Stars deliver in October, right? Maybe he shows up in the big spots, but he has been so bad this year that if I'm the Brewers, I don't know if I can count on him right now at the plate either. And they continue to use him in the middle of that lineup. The Braves have the better lineup. The Brewers have the better pitching staff. So it's kind of, you know, which strength is going to be even stronger? Something may have to give here in this series, but as the old cliche goes, good pitching beats good hitting. For the Braves, for them to win the series, you know, things have to come together. Like Max Fried has been fantastic second half of the year, so too has Charlie Morton. They're going to have to continue to pitch like that. They're going to have to match the Brewers stars, you know, with their great performances. And when I say Brewers stars, again, I'm talking about the Cy Young. So these two probably are going to have to pitch like two of the best pitchers in baseball. because that's what you may get out of the Brewers with their starting rotation. So if you're Charlie Morton, if you're Max Fried, no pressure, just match that. If you're Ian Anderson in a potentially big third game, he had another good year. Ian Anderson was fantastic in the playoffs. You know, he's going to have to come up big. You're going to have to rely on some of that depth in the bullpen, which is also my concern. Is there enough depth there on the pitching staff? Oh, Will Smith in a playoff game, can you imagine? My goodness. That'll be frustrating for Braves fans. And the other big concern for the Braves that I've been talking about all week is just the how reliant they are on homers. I don't think that wins in the postseason, especially against a good pitching staff like this. For the Braves to get past this series, they'll have to come up with some big hits, especially from Austin Riley, Freddie Freeman, and that starting rotation will have to go pretty much pitch for pitch, close to it at least, against the Brewers' great starters with Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff and Freddie Peralta. If you're Charlie Morton, if you're Max Fried, if you're Ian Anderson, that's who the pressure's on. You have to try to match those guys on the other side. I think it will be a good series. I could certainly see it going five. If I had to pick, I'd pick the Brewers. Would I be surprised if the Braves won the series? No. You get the good history matchup here of, you know, Milwaukee, the Braves going to play in Milwaukee and that whole connection. I think it's a good series. We'll see if the Braves can survive in advance. But as I said last segment, I mean, you know, I think the perspective to be had here at the Braves is just be happy that they even got to this point, because for two-thirds of the season, it did not look like they would be here or would win the division. And they're the worst team record-wise in the playoffs, so this should all be gravy moving forward. Can their hitters do enough against that rotation? Can their own rotation match up to the Brewers' strong pitching staff? We'll see starting tomorrow. When we come back, we'll talk fantasy football, help you set your lineups, and also get ready for Week 5 of the NFL season with Paul Charchian. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Baby, I feel good from the moment I rise.
It's Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Got a great Thursday night football game to kick off Week 5 of the NFL season. You may have some questions for your fantasy football lineup or just wondering what to expect this weekend in the NFL. We're here to help. As joining us now, as he does every week at this time, is Paul Charchian, owner and operator of GuillotineLeagues.com. Check it out today. See his free player rankings there and follow him on Twitter at Paul Charchian. Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Nice to talk to you. As always, Luke, you mentioned a good Thursday night game, and this is the first one where, at least on paper, these are compelling teams, Rams and Seahawks. All the other Thursday night games this year, you know, outside, I guess, week one, have been, do I got to watch? But they end up being good games. That's been the funny thing. You know, the Monday night slate's been bad. The Thursday night slate's been bad. But these games end up being really, really good games.
Yeah, we've been blessed in that sense. And, hey, this is what happens when Fox takes over. Now they got to get these good games, these good matchups tonight, when it's not just the NFL Network. We have Seahawks-Rams tonight. So let's look at this from a fantasy perspective and go team by team. Starting with Seattle, that offense woke up in the second half. They're at home tonight, short week. For a fantasy perspective, how do you like this matchup for Seattle against the Rams?
Well, two things. Let's start here. Chris Carson's very unlikely to play, and that means Alex Collins is the guy to go pick up right now because he will probably start. And you might be thinking, you know, Rams, elite defense, and they were last year, but they're not this year. We'll talk more about that in the passing game in a minute, but they're giving up kind of right in the middle of the pack in terms of yards allowed, and it's pretty substantial. 137 yards per game to opposing running backs. That's a lot, 137. I mean, if Alex Collins is going to get most of the work, I would like to have most of 137 combo yards and a score. So he becomes plausible. Last week, the Cardinals handled the Rams on the ground, 170 rushing yards and two touchdowns, and they won the game on the ground. So we're going to see some Alex Collins in this game, and it's not a bad matchup. He's startable. And then, you know, the passing attack, that might be an area where, again, you feel nervous about challenging the Rams, but they're not the same team as last year. They really seem to have suffered from the loss of defensive coordinator Brandon Staley, who's crushing it with the Chargers right now, because Kyler Murray just dissected the Rams. He threw just 8 incompletions last week against the Rams. The week before that, Tom Brady rolled up 400 yards against the Rams. Yeah, Jalen Ramsey's there, and he probably shadows DK Metcalf, but DeAndre Hopkins got himself to a good game against Ramsey last week. So, Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, all startable as far as I'm concerned tonight.
On the flip side for the Rams, this offense for the most part this year has been dynamic, explosive. Does tonight's matchup, short week on the road against Seattle, concern you at all, or you like the Rams as well in this matchup?
Start them all. I love them. Seahawks have slumped to 24th in pass coverage by Pro Football Focus. Their cornerbacks are bad. DJ Reed, Trey Flowers, Sidney Jones, Ugo Amadi. It is none of those guys compare to the players that Stafford's Rams have got that they're throwing out there, including what it feels like Robert Woods is sitting on, like this makeup game after being so quiet for a month. It feels like he should be sitting a good game. The catch might be Cooper Kupp's got an amazing matchup in the slot against safety turned cornerback Ugo Amadi. He ranks 104th at cornerback by Pro Football Focus. So Kupp's going to get a lot of work in this game, and you just hope that Robert Woods can chip in some too. But I love Matthew Stafford. He's my number 2 ranked quarterback this week.
That's perfect, because I was going to ask you about Kupp. So at least tonight you like this matchup. But, you know, we can be so reactionary. Like, the Raiders start 3-0, they lose, and we think, oh, that's it, right? This team was fraudulent. Cooper Kupp has those big, huge first couple of weeks. And then by his standards, a bit of a slower game against the Cardinals, 5 catches, 64 yards, and people think like, oh boy, here we go. That was just a flash in the pan. My question being, last week I asked you about Mike Williams. Let me ask you about Cooper Kupp now. Do you expect him to play at least close to what we saw those first couple of weeks here throughout the year, or is this somebody that could be like a sell-high candidate?
No, I'm no way I'm selling Cooper Kupp. This is the guy that – you know, here's, if nothing else, listen to these target numbers. You know, nothing so important to a receiver to have the opportunity to catch passes. Here's his target numbers over the 4 weeks: 10, 11, 12, 13. 13 targets last week. Now, it only resulted in 5 catches, and I think they schemed specifically to try to take him out of this game and have the Rams win somewhere else, and they really couldn't do that very well. But he's going to have so many strong matchups in the slot. No way am I giving up on Cooper Kupp. I love him connected with Matthew Stafford. It's going to be great. Most of the season, he's going to be very, very good.
Moving to the running back position, I feel like a broken record because every week I have to ask you about, you know, injuries with running backs and how does this backfield look. So let me ask you about a couple of there, and we'll start with Dalvin Cook to update that from last time we spoke. He did play, but, you know, not a ton this past week. So for Dalvin Cook owners, how should they be looking at this weekend for him?
Yeah, it was a worst-case scenario for Cook where he starts the game, and so he's active, so everybody has to put Dalvin in your lineup, and then he ends up leaving for the middle two quarters of the game, and it's also a brutal matchup against a very, very good Browns defense. Now, this week, it's much more promising. I do believe he will start the game unless he has a setback on the ankle, which could happen because they're not resting him adequately. He should be able to destroy the Lions. So the hope here is if they do end up resting him at some point, he's already had his big game at that point, and they're up by 21, and they go to Madison at that point. And if that's the case, that'd be okay too. So, a much better prospects for Dalvin Cook, barring some kind of a setback. And I think you know at least in the short term, it's a pretty safe opportunity here.
For the Bengals, Joe Mixon, do you think he goes this week? How do you play that situation? Do you pick up his backup? Do you trust him? What would you do with the Bengals backfield?
Yeah, Bengals. We don't expect it. We do not expect Joe Mixon to go, ankle injury, and it looks like it'll be Samaje Perine and a little bit of Chris Evans as more of a pass catching back. And he's a sneaky pickup in deeper leagues. Evans is, and he'll be on the field more than I think people realize. You know, an easy way to beat the Packers is to run on the Packers. It's been this way for several years, but the other side of it is they're not going to have Jaire Alexander. He's one of the best cornerbacks in the league. He's going to be out and maybe out for a long time, and that's going to have some, it's going to provide some opportunities for the passing game and Joe Burrow, even if T. Higgins doesn't go. So, yeah, Samaje Perine's a guy you could pivot to, but, that's, to me, that's a little bit more of a desperation move than some of the other guys we've talked about.
David Montgomery out for 4 to 5 weeks, they believe, with the Chicago Bears. So, who are you looking at there now in their backfield?
Damian Williams is good. Remember, he was a guy who powered Kansas City through the playoffs and into the Super Bowl, and many people thought he should have been the Super Bowl MVP of the game that they won against San Francisco. Then he took last year off with COVID, and now he's back and will be the lead back in a fairly positive matchup. And I do like him and believe he's absolutely startable this week. Damian Williams is my number 16 ranked running back against Las Vegas. They're allowing roughly league average rushing numbers, but they've given up the second most touchdowns to running backs at 6 already. So, yeah, I think Damian Williams potentially sitting on a nice little game here.
Christian McCaffrey was back at practice yesterday. Do you think we already see him as soon as this weekend? What do you think the timeline now becomes for C-Mac?
I don't. This is at the very, very early end of his projected timeline. And if the same Panthers front office is going to act like they did last year, they always took it safe with him. And they never rushed him back through all the injuries he had last year. Never brought him back until he was basically 100%. And that's why I don't think we're going to see him this week. You know, if he is available, it probably means he's close to 100% and you can safely put him in your lineup. But I don't think he's going to go because this kind of injury generally takes more time, Luke.
Talking with Paul Charchian on Twitter at Paul Charchian. Check out his free player rankings at guillotineleagues.com. I guess sticking with that running back position, Cordarrelle Patterson, CP84 going unreal off this past week. Can we count on him now moving forward for the Falcons?
What an amazing run for Cordarrelle Patterson. I am staggering that we're talking about him blowing up at age 30. Like, this is the year where it all comes together for Cordarrelle Patterson. 5 touchdowns, which is tied for the NFL lead. He's over 100 yards in back-to-back games. But I don't think you can analyze Cordarrelle and really talk about him going forward unless you understand what Mike Davis is giving this team, because it ain't good. Davis, you know, there's a stat out there called rushing yards over expectation, where they look and say, all right, on this particular run, you should have gained 4 yards. How many yards did you really get? Mike Davis's rushing yards over expectation is -1.2.
Oof.
That's rushing yards under expectation.
Right.
And Patterson is delivering almost 1.5 yards per carry more than Davis is. He's obviously an elite receiving running back. And while, sure, Arthur Smith isn't going to suddenly mold Cordarrelle Patterson into Derrick Henry, right? You're not going to get like 30 carries out of him. But Davis is just bringing nothing to the table. So I think Patterson's current usage almost has to continue at this point. He's going to catch a lot of passes. He's going to keep running enough to chip in some decent ground stats. And he's going to remain a viable week-to-week starter. Cordarrelle Patterson, it's the best story. It's the best story of the year, Luke.
Yeah, how about that? And the job he's doing there with the Falcons. Debo Samuel's been fantastic this year.
Yeah.
If Trey Lance is the starting quarterback, does that change anything for those receivers in San Francisco or maybe even the running backs? How big of an impact could Trey Lance have for that team?
Well, so Lance brings a far bigger arm to San Francisco than what Jimmy Garoppolo had, but obviously he's super green, and they don't even, all things being even, they wouldn't have him in the game. But you know, now they don't have a choice, and they're playing him at this point. I believe you're going to have hit and miss games like many rookie quarterbacks. You're going to have hit and miss games. You know, Samuel scored that long touchdown last week, but there wasn't a defender within 10 yards of him. I mean, if he doesn't connect on that, we're not talking about the same kind of game for Debo Samuel. And so, you know, it's still going to be the passing from Trey Lance is still going to be a work in process. And I think we're going to have some good games and bad games. You're going to have to be smart about when you start their receivers. Although Debo Samuel feels like an every week starter to me.
Before we let you go, talking with Paul Charchian, free player rankings at guillotineleagues.com. Follow him on Twitter at Paul Charchian. And the two questions that I always ask you before we let you go, let's first start with the positive, a sleeper, somebody that could still be available out there that you like this weekend.
Marquez Callaway is the Saints' best receiver, and he's the only receiver who's getting more than 50% of the snaps. He's at like 70% of the snaps, or he's on the field. They go up against a Washington secondary that I thought was going to be way better than it is. It's terrible, getting destroyed by wideouts in particular. Washington allowing 233 yards to wide receivers per game. That's the third most. Their 7 touchdowns allowed to wide receivers is the fourth most. Callaway runs from all over the field. Washington has no stoppers at the cornerback position. And so That's a guy that I like a lot as a sneaky play, Marquez Callaway. And let me give you one more. Zach Wilson, coming off his great game last week, his first really good game. He gets your Falcons, you know, half, you guys use a half Falcons. They've been roasted by three or four opposing quarterbacks, including Taylor Heinicke last week. And, you know, Heinicke's not exactly a, you know, precision big armed passer. He's got, Zach Wilson's got nice matchups where for his receivers, Jamison Crowder, Corey Davis have got good matchups against some bad cornerbacks. So yeah, I like him as somebody that I think you can go to war with. You want a bad matchup. Antonio Gibson against the Saints, barely startable at this point, because Gibson's been totally phased out of the receiving game, which is how you can beat the Saints. Where you can't beat the Saints is on the ground. They are the best run defense in the league, giving up 51 rushing yards per game to the position. That's it. They have crushed opposing runners like Damian Harris, Christian McCaffrey, Aaron Jones. I mean, great runners. And they're not able to get anything done on the ground. I don't think Gibson does here either.
Well, that answers my next question. Stay away from Gibson then this week in there against the Saints. He's Paul Charchian on Twitter, @PaulCharchian. Check out GuillotineLeagues.com for his free player rankings or to sign up. I'm still alive in our Guillotine League.
Yes,
for now,
you are, my friend.
Yeah.
Nicely done. I like that you're still alive. And if I recall, you've still got a lot of money left to spend, right?
Yes, I mentioned this last week, and then we went through the whole waiver of the bidding process again, and I went, I think, 1-for-8 on waiver. I'm still trying to read the room and assess how much it takes to, you know, get some of these players. So I've been striking out on a lot, therefore leaving me with a good amount of cash still.
Yeah, that's the good news. And you know, every week, better and better teams are getting cut, and so you know you find yourself in a pretty good spot to continue to have some money. And you know, you're when I look at your roster, you've got Kyler Murray, who is powering your team almost single-handedly. But then Chuba Hubbard, that's going to dry up in a week or so, right? Melvin Gordon is getting outclassed by Williams, and that's going to be a problem for you at some point. Now, I think Calvin Ridley's breakout game is coming this week. So we'll hope we're right about that. Terry McLaurin's super safe. And now you need Dalvin Cook to have the kind of game that he can have against the Lions this week. And you'll be safe for another week.
Yeah, hopefully that's the plan. Survive in advance. Can people still sign up for Guillotine Leagues this week at guillotineleagues.com?
They can. Basically, we have new live drafts anytime there isn't a football game going or imminently about to go. So I think we still have a couple of drafting opportunities for this afternoon and then tomorrow and Saturday as well, if you want to try the hottest, freshest new format in fantasy sports.
Perfect. GuillotineLeagues.com. It's a blast. Charge, appreciate it as always. We'll talk with you next week.
Thanks, Luke. Bye-bye.
All right, pleasure's all ours. Paul Charchian on Twitter, @PaulCharchian. The best when it comes to fantasy football. Check out guillotineleagues.com or just follow him on Twitter, @PaulCharchian, to get his tips there. Always appreciate him joining us every week. Oh, that Guillotine League, I have made it. I said originally, right, I just wanted to get past week one, but here we are, still alive. Now I just have to hope Dalvin Cook goes out there and has a standard game. Hopefully Calvin Ridley will even play. He may not be available this week, so we'll see. That's the thing about the Guillotine League. One bad week, your season's over. You get one guy injured that you're counting on. Like, I had DJ Chark got injured on the first series last week as one of my starters, and it's like, oh, boy, I just took a zero there. Fortunately, it didn't cost me. I had a good enough week otherwise. But you get one injury, first quarter of a game, that could be it. Chops your head off in the Guillotine Leagues. We'll try to make it to next week. Appreciate the time, as always, from Charge. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Wrapping hour two on a throwback Thursday. This is a great song. Were the Chambers a one-hit wonder? The Chamber Brothers, pardon me, right? The Chamber Brothers, is that what this band is? Were they a one-hit wonder?
as far as I know.
Yeah, it's a good song, though. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Paul Charchian, getting us ready for week 5 of the NFL season. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. That song was used in Remember the Titans? And it was used in all sorts of movies. I guess they also made a different movie called The Zodiac, about the Zodiac Killer. Did you see that they think they finally figured out who it was? Now, for somebody as weird as I am that's into that type of stuff, I was very intrigued. I haven't gone down that rabbit hole yet to read all the information, but they believe they cracked the case. And the person they believe that was the Zodiac Killer actually passed away, if they're correct, passed away 3 years ago. But they think they have figured it out. However, this announcement did come days after the movie was added to Netflix. So there are some conspiracy theorists out there that believe, you know, this is all just a ploy to have people go watch the movie on Netflix now that Netflix has the rights. Netflix floats this out there and everybody thinks like, oh, I got to go watch this movie now. Anyways. Hey, the Charleston Battery are coming down the end of their season, last couple of weeks of the season. How about this? We got a deal for you for the Battery for their game on Sunday. It's a 2 p.m. match. I always say game. It's a match, 2 p.m. Sunday. You could get discounted tickets, an exclusive 20% discount for tickets to Sunday's match. Just use promo code ESPN on SeatGeek to get 20% off tickets. So how about that? You want to go to a Battery game this weekend? They're playing Sunday at 2. Get yourself some cheaper tickets. It's already cheap to begin with. Now you can get them even cheaper. 20% off. Just use the code ESPN on SeatGeek and get yourself some tickets discounted to the match Sunday for the Battery. Trying to make a stretch run here. Final month of the season. They only have now 3 home games left, so you might as well get out there while you can. And why not? Sunday afternoon, take the family. 20% off. Use promo code ESPN. They'll also have a watch party tonight for their game against Tampa Bay at the Rusty Bull. So if you are a Battery fan or if you got nothing going on tonight, head on over to the Rusty Bull and watch them take on the Tampa Bay Rowdies, their rival, in their road match tonight as the Battery finish up their season. See them while you still can. Promo code ESPN. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones. Dave from Georgetown is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Chula.
Yeah, we got you.
And Jim? Y'all coming in good.
Oh, good to hear.
Yeah, what was you talking about me yesterday?
Well, you picked the Yankees to win on Tuesday. Then you were calling in yesterday requesting Boston-themed music as if you didn't take the Yankees 2 days ago. You can't flip-flop.
Yeah, I'm doing it for you.
Oh. Well,
my,
I appreciate
that. My team is gone now. Now, I heard last night I listened to a sports talk.
Mm-hmm.
With that announcer's name, what is it? I can't think of his name. But anyway, Corn something.
Yeah.
Corn Blue?
Yep.
And he's a Yankee fan, and he said he's finished. He ain't going to listen to none of the rest of it. I'm the same way. I'm a Yankee fan. I don't care who wins it now. I won't watch it. I've always been that way. I'm a Yankee fan.
Not a baseball fan. You're a Yankee fan.
I'm not a whole baseball fan. I don't have a big TV screen and watching all the games at one time. I never cared nothing about that. But that's just the way I am. But I found one other guy like me.
Yeah. That's the typical Yankee fans. That's right.
Out there, but I'm pulling for you because you're a Boston fan.
That's
okay?
Right. Yep.
And now, I was watching the game on live chat.
Uh-huh.
Boy, they look funny on live chat, don't they? The players, they don't look right. In other words, I was watching on live chat, and with Jugs trying to steal home,
uh-huh.
I turned it off.
That's when you turned it off.
Yeah. I turned it off.
You had enough. Well, that was the moment. Yeah, that's the moment that changed the game. So you might as well have turned it off at that point. When Judge got thrown out at home, that swung the game. Typical Yankee fans, though, right? Only care about the Yankees. Nobody else exists in baseball. If it's not the Yankees, they're not watching. Curious who Bobby was rooting for. Grew up, you know, he used to love Whitey Ford. He used to root for the Yankees. Then more recently, I think he says the Red Sox are his AL team. You can't flip-flop. Who are you pulling for in that big game the other night? And yes, once again, I have my Red Sox shirt on. Going the whole week with Red Sox gear as long as they're playing. This shirt, though, Feels like it. Yeah, that's right. This shirt feels like it was, you know, I feel like I've been struck by a gamma ray. This shirt's a little too small on me, the sleeves. But we're repping. Hour 3 coming up next with Lee Sterling.